a weakened barrier away from the jam. Static electricity crackling over the warping sheet of metal.
Molotovs!
Dean rummaged in his shoulder bag for the firebombs. Doc was already at the interior keypad, tapping in the access code to try to make the redoubt door close faster. But the armored slab didn't increase or diminish its speed. Slow and steady, it reached the far wall, paused, and began the journey back home. Flicking her butane lighter, Mildred started igniting the greasy rag fuses, and the companions crashed the Molotovs into the alcove. The combined bottles built a raging conflagration that overflowed into the redoubt. Jack added a pint of whiskey he'd taken from the department store. The flames soared as the materials ignited, and everybody waited breathlessly to see if the door would close before the death cloud breached the bonfire. The opening between the black metal door and wall was only a foot wide when the first tendril writhed out from the dying flames. They poured hot lead into the narrowing crack, but still more of the fog pulsed into the redoubt when the door finally slammed shut. The remaining piece of Cerberus lashed about wildly as if in pain, then began to dissipate and vanish from sight.
Safe.
Warm currents from the life support system were already carrying away any trace of the cloud or firebombs. The replacement air was dry and flat, tasting of iron and antiseptically clean, the floor vibrating with a faint hum of powerful machinery. The overhead fluorescent lights were bright with only a few dark tubes in the fixtures, and one flickering as it struggled to stay alive.
The hell we are.
Faint wisps of cloud were seeping through the hairline cracks around the massive portal.
That trans chamber.
Heading down the zigzagging anti-rad tunnel from the front door, the companions burst into the redoubt's garage. The area was packed solid with the materials and supplies from the National Guard Armory. Vehicles, Bradleys, trucks, and a dozen Hummers. Crates of weapons, explosives, and blasters were stacked to the ceiling. It was the wealth of the pre-dark world.
Implograns!
JB went straight to the case. The others assumed defensive positions and watched the mouth of the entrance corridor for any sign of the approaching mist.
Well?
Almost got it.
The armorer struggled to rip open the packing case. His knife slipped and hit the floor, skittering away. Jack gestured and handed him another.
Move it, John. It's coming.
Buy me some time.
Pray tell, with what?
Try this Molotov.
The tendril retreated a bit from the small blaze, and Ryan looked over the assortment of military hardware for an answer. There was enough here to conquer the world, but nothing was primed and ready. In 5 minutes, they would be safe. In an hour, unstoppable. But they had only moments before the cloud would be here. They needed something right now.
The lantern.
Ryan grabbed it from Christy to smash the pressurized lamp on top of a sealed wooden crate carrying the alphanumeric sequence for thermite grenades. The wick ignited the oil and the flames climbed high, burning into the wood.
Time to go. Take the stairs. The elevators might not be working.
Just another couple of secs.
JB hacked away at the stubborn wood. There was already a hole in the top of the crate, and he could see a piece of an implogren. It was only inches away. The armorer tried to shove his hand into the opening, but it was too muscular. The splinter stabbed his flesh, making the hand slippery with blood, and he forced it in deeper, a fingertip brushing the handle of the deadly high-tech Gren. Grabbing his arm, Mildred pulled the man away from the crate.
We have to go now, John!
Shit!
Blood dripping onto the floor, JB glared in raw hatred at the packing crate, then grabbed his Uzi and started off at a run. Almost every redoubt was built along similar designs, and this was a configuration the companions knew by heart. Dodging through the crates, they reached the stairs and jumped down the steps. As they reached the third level, they plowed out of the stairwell and charged for the Mat-Trans chamber. Slamming open the control room door, they saw that the ComSent monitors were operating normally. Going to the chamber, Christy opened the vein door, and everybody raced through. The last one in, Ryan saw a wisp of fog snake into the control room.
It's here.
As always, the Mat-Trans unit waited patiently a few moments for a destination code to be pressed into the keypad. When nothing was entered, the machine commenced to activate a random jump. Static electricity began crackling in the air as wild lights sparkled. Slowly, a swirling mist began to cloud the chamber, twinkling lights like tiny stars shooting through the floor and the companions themselves. Only yards away, Ryan saw the door begin to dissolve under the arrival of the Cerberus fog. Seconds counted now. The lights grew in numbers and brightness until they were immersed in a swirling galaxy of flaring novas. The universe vanished. and the companions fell through the floor into infinite nothingness and beyond. 100 miles away, Lord Baron Kinnison was driving his Hummer through the farmlands of his island, heading for the sulfur mines to review the torture status of some slaves, when a powerful quake shook the land.
What the fuck was that?
Sitting beside the obese Norm, the Lady Deirdre Kinnison looked up in terror, every fiber of her muty being jarring and warning. Without a word, she scrambled from the vehicle and started running toward the nearby ocean.
Where the hell are you going, bitch?
Utterly confused, Kinnison scowled when another quake shook the mountain range and the dormant volcano erupted.
Fuck me.
Hot ash and smoke thundered from the ragged peak. Fiery balls of burning sulfur spewed from the mountain. Then the side of the range cracked open wide, and out poured a river of molten lava.
Damn it all to hell!
Kinnison started the wag and twisted the wheel to escape, even as a soft gray snowfall of pumice ash fell to blanket the ground. The Hummer traversed only a few yards before the tires slipped in the loose material. The Lord Baron stomped on the gas pedal, pushing it to the floor, but the engine rattled and died, the air intake completely clogged by the thick ash. The bandages around his face acting as a natural mask, the fat man struggled from the wag and waddled hastily away, his heart pounding savagely in his laboring chest. Again and again his boots slipped in the swirling ash, and he finally went sprawling as a sulfur ball crashed nearby and the explosion tossed him away. A broken, bleeding lump of flesh. His smashed body racked with agony, Kinnison could only lie there as the ash slowly covered him. Another tremor shook the island, and then the ground beneath him yawned open. Helpless, the Baron fell into the crevice and landed on a sluggish river of lava. Instantly, his hair vanished. His bandages caught fire as the heat seared into his cracking bones. Saturated with jolt, the Baron stayed alive for long seconds, his body sizzling until the intense heat boiled his blood and the fat man burst apart in a gory spray. Ripping off her new dress, Lady Deirdre continued to sprint for her life, the terrible heat of the lava flow announcing its arrival right behind her. The mutie could feel her hair singe off. Icy adrenaline poured into her veins, and the woman dashed forward with renewed strength, her velvet slippers pounding against the hot soil. The killing heat diminished slightly as she pelted across the grasslands, leaping over small bushes and a dry creek.
Yes!
She was going to leave. Reaching the cliff, Deirdre simply threw herself over the edge and arched her body into a diving position as she knifed for the life-saving water below. She was still falling when a vent from the volcano vomited red-hot lava into the sea, and the shoreline began to furiously bubble into a fiery cauldron from the Stygian geological exhaust. She barely had time to cry out before she plunged into the boiling ocean, her death scream overwhelmed by the roiling fury of the erupting volcano. Beneath the ruins of nuke-ravaged Seattle, Ryan Carter and his warrior companions come face to face with the ancestors of a secret society whose members were convinced that paradise awaited at the center of the Earth. This cult is inexorably tied to a conspiracy of 20th century scientists devoted to fulfilling a vision of genetic manipulation. In this labyrinthine bill, carved from the subterranean passages of a doomed past, some of the descendants of the Illuminated Ones are pursuing the dream of their legacy, while others seek to turn the dream to nightmare. Deathlands 56, Sunchild. Deathlands Shadow Fortress is a Cutting Audio production. Copyright 2004, The Cutting Corporation. Performed by Richard Rowan, with Colleen Delaney, Annette Savard, Terrence Acil Ford, Christopher Walker, and David Elias. Directed by Rick Rowan. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Vocal editing by Matt Webb and Dan Smith. Sound design by Brian Patton and Dan Smith. The Deathlands theme was composed by Mark Ashby.